Chapter 23. Elba, Italy. He let the beetle crawl up his finger and over the back of his hand before he nudged it with his other finger into his palm. Sam rose from his crouch alongside the dirt road and turned to Remy, who was taking pictures of the ocean far below.
"History's a funny thing," he said.
"How so?"
"This beetle. For all we know, it could be related to one Napoleon himself used to make the ink."
"Has it spit on you?"
"Not as far as I can tell.
Selma said the ink came from a spitting beetle."
"You're missing my point. Where's your sense of whimsy?" Remy lowered her camera and looked at him.
"Sorry," he said with a smile.
"Forgot who I was talking to."
"I understand your point."
She checked her watch, then said, "We'd better get moving. It's almost 3. Daylight's burning." Their dinner the night before with Yvette Fournier-Desmarais had gone late into the evening and well into 3 bottles of wine, by which time she had convinced them to cancel their hotel reservations and stay the night. They awoke the next morning and shared a veranda breakfast of coffee, croissants, fresh pineapple, and French scrambled eggs with leeks, fresh pepper, and mint before heading to the airport. For reasons neither Sam nor Remy had been able to deduce, daily flights to and from Elba were restricted to 1 airline, Intersky, which serviced only 3 cities, Friedrichshafen, Munich, and Zurich. The other 2 carriers, Skywork and ElbaFly, offered more departure points, but only flew 3 days a week, so from Nice they'd boarded an Air France flight to Florence, then a train to Piombino, then finally a ferry across the 10-mile stretch of sea to Rio Marina on Elba's east coast. Their rental car, a compact 1991 Lancia Delta, paled in comparison to the Porsche Cayenne, but the air conditioner worked and the engine, small though it was, ran smoothly. Per Yvette's instructions, they'd driven inland from Rio Marina, passing through 1 quaint Tuscan village after another. Toliati, Civera, San Lorenzo, winding their way through lush rolling hills and vineyards, higher and higher into the mountains, until stopping at this promontory overlooking the eastern side of the island. If not for Napoleon's exile, Elba would not be the household name it was, which, as far as Sam and Remy were concerned, was a shame, as it had its own unique story. Over its long history, Elba had seen its share of invaders and occupiers, from the Etruscans to the Romans to the Saracens, until the 11th century, when the island fell under the aegis of the Republic of Pisa. From there it changed hands a 6 times through sale or annexation, starting with the Visconti of Milan and ending in 1860 when it became a protectorate of the Kingdom of Italy. Remy snapped a few more pictures, then they got back in the car and continued on.
"So where exactly did Napoleon spend his exile?" Sam asked.
Remy flipped through her post-it note marked Frommer's Guidebook.
"In Portoferraio, on the northern coast. He had 2 homes, actually, the Villa San Martino and the Villa dei Mulini. He had a staff of somewhere between 600 and 1,000, and took the title Emperor of Elba."
"Took the title, or was slapped in the face with it?" Sam asked. "After having had a good chunk of Europe under his thumb, Emperor of Elba had to have been something of a letdown."
"True.
Another fun fact, before leaving for Elba, Napoleon tried to poison himself."
"No kidding."
"Apparently he kept it in a bottle around his neck, a cocktail of opium, belladonna, and white hellebore. Before leaving on the Russian campaign, he had it mixed up."
"He probably didn't want to fall into the hands of the Cossacks."
"Well, I can't say I blame him. They still don't like him. Anyway, he drank it, but by then it was a 2 years old and 2 weak. He spent the night writhing in pain on the floor, but survived."
"Remy, you're a font of knowledge."
She ignored him, still reading.
"What none of the historians seem to agree on is how exactly he escaped. There were both French and Prussian guards stationed all over the island, and offshore there was a British man of war on constant patrol."
"Tricky little devil."
Car behind us, Sam said a few minutes later. Remy turned and looked out the back window. A half mile down the mountain road, a cream-colored Peugeot was rounding a curve. It disappeared from view for a few moments behind a hillside, then reappeared. He's in a hurry. Since leaving the Bahamas, both Sam and Remy had been hyper-vigilant to signs of pursuit, but had so far seen nothing. The problem with an island as small as Elba was that it had limited points of entry, and Bondurek's wealth could go a long way here. Sam tightened his grip on the wheel, eyes alternating between the rearview mirror and the road ahead. A couple minutes later, the Peugeot appeared behind them and closed the gap until it was only a few feet off their bumper. Glare from the sun kept the occupants in silhouette, but Sam could make out two shapes, both male. Sam stuck his arm out the window and waved for them to pass. The Peugeot didn't move, glued to their tail. Then abruptly it pulled out and started speeding up. Sam tensed his foot, ready to hit the brake. Remy glanced out the passenger window. There was the narrowest of dirt shoulders there, followed by a sharp drop-off. 500 feet below, she could see goats grazing in a pasture. They looked like ants. Their passenger tire swerved a few inches right. Gravel peppered the side of the car. Sam eased left, back onto blacktop. "Buckled in?" he said through clenched teeth. "Yep." "Where are they?" "Coming up right now." The Peugeot drew even with Sam's door. Sitting in the passenger seat, a swarthy man with a handlebar mustache stared at him. The man nodded once, curtly. Then the Peugeot's engine revved, and it sprinted ahead and disappeared around the next bend. "Friendly folks," Remy said with a loud exhale. Sam relaxed his hands on the wheel, flexing his fingers to get blood flowing back into them. "How far left to go?" Remy unfolded the map, her finger tracing along. 5, 6 miles. They reached their destination in the late afternoon. Perched on the slopes of Monte Capanello and surrounded by forests of Aleppo pines and juniper, the village of Rio Nell'Elba, population 900, sat under the shadow of the 11th-century castle Volterraio, and was to Sam's and Remy's eyes the epitome of a medieval Tuscan village, complete with narrow cobblestoned alleys, shadowed piazzas, and stone balconies overflowing with orchids and cascading lavender. Remy said, "Says here Rio Nell'Elba is the rock-hunting capital of Tuscany. They're still finding mines that date back to the Etruscans." They found a parking spot across from the hermitage of Santa Caterina and got out. According to Yvette, their contact, a man named Umberto Cipriani, was the assistant curator of the Museo dei Minerali, the mining museum. Remy got herself oriented on the map and they started walking, finding the museum 10 minutes later. As they crossed the piazza, Sam said, "Here, let me take your picture. Stand in front of the fountain." She did as he asked, smiled for several shots, then rejoined Sam, who called up the images on the camera's LCD screen. "We should take another, Sam. I'm a little out of focus." "I know. Look at what is in focus. Smile. Look pleased." Remy peered more closely at the image. 50 feet behind her blurred figure, she could see the hood of a cream-colored car jutting from the mouth of a shadowed alley. Behind the wheel, a man stared at them through a pair of binoculars.